You're listening to Red Nation Online.
I really got a feeling like we could catch fire and have a great season, huh? Now, who's with me?
Woo! Electric in the air! Yeah!
Thank you for that show of enthusiasm.
Sunday, March 1st, it's Kamal Hilton, Aaron Nielsen, and I'm Ian Clark, and this is Eastside Stand-Up's 2015 TFC Preview Episode. It's the start of our seventh season discussing Toronto FC, and perhaps a bit more subdued compared to last year. Lessons learned that tens of millions in ad campaigns don't equal success? We will see is the mandate as we try to remain neutral, discussing the pros and cons of the latest signings, the potential of Greg Vanney, our predictions for 2015, and role of TFC2. All that and more in the first episode of the season. You're listening to Eastside Stand Up.
I'll kick this one off, guys. I'll take it from the top. Pretty much, I think the way I wanted to start this episode was filling the gap from the last one that was actually Aaron and I, and how much time elapsed since then. And that's the first thing that I've been thinking off the top of how to start this podcast, and maybe just address that quickly, because I did get quite a few emails, as so many things happened between that last podcast with player signings and changes to the club and whatnot. And I think my thought was, yes, we could have done a weekly podcast through that stretch. But the one thing that I thought in terms of just, you know, the podcasting landscape in Toronto was I wanted to avoid redundancy. Mm-hmm. As we know, the Vocal Minority is a really good podcast that's covering TFC, and they cover it more of that week to week, covering the news of the league and the team. I didn't want to cover that. But then I also thought, you know, to avoid my natural inclination to be negative towards this team, I thought it would be wise to stick to the mandate of Eastside Stand Up, which really is breaking down the game and trying to capture that sort of post-match or match emotion that we feel when you're at BMO Field or we're watching it on TV, and in the immediacy of a result or actions from a game, and discussing it in that moment. And I think that's what I want to stick with, and that's why we've let that time slide. And now the season is about to start. Touch wood, it'll be starting next weekend. Yeah, we're in this episode. This episode is sort of the preview episode for Eastside Stand Up in Toronto FC, but also assuming that next weekend at this time, we'll be doing the first episode. And I think that the first thing I kind of wanted to start off with is part of the irony is actually we're at halftime of the last preseason game against Costa Rica U23, which has been a pretty decent first half. But also I kind of thought, you know, there's been seasons where I've really been into the preseason, and I don't know how much I took from that, like looking back on a full year of what's really, except for maybe seeing some players stand out in those games, there wasn't a whole lot I felt that said, oh, this is a strong indicator of what this season is going to be like. Yeah. Your thoughts, guys, on sort of like this early part of the year and whatnot.
Yeah, I think I think it was good that you didn't do like weekly pods, like you were saying, because I think it's good every once in a while to step back and look at things from a big picture point of view. So from a big picture point of view, things, I think they're shaping up pretty well. Yes, you have the signings of Josie and Sebastian Giovinco, but I think the little moves that Toronto FC have done have been more impressive than in years past.
For example?
Like, to me, this might sound crazy out there, but I think the more impactful signing will be Benoit Cherou, even more so than Giovinco and Altidore, because of what he brings. He brings, not to disrespect those guys, but he brings a professionalism of he knows exactly what he's supposed to do, and he's going to do it, and he's going to cover for what I thought Bradley lacked a little bit, especially towards the end of last year. He I think in my impression was he kind of thought of himself as a Mr. Everything. Like he had to carry the ball up. He had to be playmaker. He had to cover people and be defender. And
argue with the ref.
Yeah, he had to do everything, right? Sheru, he's going to pick up a lot of that slack for him. And we saw in this preseason game, now I don't know about the other ones, but in this one, you actually noticed this, Ian, that he was carrying the ball up a little bit and Bradley was sitting back a little more in the first half. So he brings that quality to the pitch as well. So overall, like I like the signing of Josie, I like the signing of Giovinco, but Sheru's the one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's expected from Sheru. Like he has a history of being a strong defensive midfielder. He's capable of doing a long pass and setting up plays, which he was doing in Marseille and other teams in France. And then the other one, too, is that he has a wicked out-foot side shot, right? Which was why the failures of Bradley yesterday. I think Bradley took, or last year, I think he took like 50 shots and only 4 or 5 hit the net. So to have that, you know, the question mark with Sheru is he motivated to play in MLS for a whole season? And because of his age and stuff like that, is he healthy? To your original point, Ian, I think, you know, and I think this is deserved. I think there's a bit more cynicism regarding the team because of past promises and past failures. And, you know, the irony is I think if this team was completely quiet and never even went out and spent the money, we'd be more excited because we'd be more anticipating what to expect. Like if you're an Impact fan or a Vancouver Whitecap fan, you don't know these new guys coming in. You're excited to see what's going to happen to prepare you for the beginning of the season. I think part of it is with Toronto is it's one of those things, boy cried wolf, right? Like I'm afraid to say good stuff because in the past I've been proven to be wrong, even though arguably you shouldn't have been wrong, even though last year the players were good enough to at least make the playoffs and be a decent team. So, you know, we're almost, I think, especially the media, I think the media is quite shy. Like last year, you know, especially in the main media with Larson and those other guys, it was day-to-day coverage of how good Toronto FC is going to be. And arguably player for player and certainly depth, I think the team is better going into the season this year. But I think everyone's, you know, scared that they don't want to look stupid.
Yeah, well, I mean, I said that last year. When we did a podcast, yeah. I said I'm traumatized. Yeah, you know, I have PTSD from these last 8 years, right? So we're at a point, and that's part of why none of these podcasts have happened, because I'm reluctant to get either, you know, go too far ahead. We're definitely at that stage, and we've said it too, where it's just like the bottom line is just win.
Let's stop the talk.
The ads, we're seeing the new ads on TV, which I'm just like mute, you know. It's on every time Tim Bezpachenko talks, mute. I'm not interested in hearing what they have to pump up themselves about. When the game kicks off next weekend, we hope then I'm ready to talk. Then I'm going to start saying things, and that's part of where we're at. But I wanted to circle back to Sheru as well, because my thoughts are, you know, that this was the thing where the first point that I want to talk about, the players were most interested in seeing. And, you know, you can make a case from the turnover where you talk about Josie and the arrival of Giovinco, maybe not necessarily their style, but in a way it's like for like. Mm-hmm. What we lost from last year we've replaced with them. But Sheru is the upgrade from where they want to say Becker or like whoever Bradley's going to be partnered with. If it's Bradley and Sheru, that is a massive upgrade from Becker. Sure. Or from Osorio, Warner, or from Cravel, or Carl Warner, right? Yeah. So that's something where you can say, okay, we've stepped it up a bit, as well as Perkey, right, on the back line. Yeah. So there are some glimmers where you can say, okay, this team has improved. And then, of course, Sheru coming in with 400 professional games.
Yeah.
You know, you can't put a price on that kind of experience. But I agree with you. There's questions about what happens when these guys are slogging through a summer in MLS, zipping across North America like they've never done in Europe on that frequency, and if they're going to be feeling it come September.
Which is why I think they supplemented some of those moves with other little moves of guys that have MLS experience, like Delgado or Robbie Finley or guys like that. They know what to expect, so you can stick them in every once in a while and say, go provide us what you've been providing us, what your track record is. Especially Delgado, I think he provides a lot of versatility because he can play fullback, he can play in the midfield. If you're playing wide, he can play as a wide winger. So he offers you And you're not going to play him every game. You stick him in for a stretch, especially when you have fixture congestion. I think he's going to be a key player to watch.
Yeah, and if I think let's go through what we've been seeing from in terms of the starting roster. I think today in this the game against Costa Rica is pretty close, I think,
yeah,
to what we're going to see. And just going through, kind of like stepping through the lineup and talking about pros and cons to everything, like from goalkeeper up to striker. And, you know, starting with Bendick in goal, which is still always a topic here on this podcast of whether he's good enough. And it's, you know, as much as I love Kurt Larson's day-to-day coverage, I think this is my one thing that sticks in my craw is his love for Joe Bendick. And him, he wrote an article this week pretty much saying how, you know, he's the best shot stopper in the league or he's a top whatever. And then when I'm reading this, I'm thinking of how also on the other side, you know, Dwayne Rollins was extrapolating the statistics of Bendick, and you know, a lot of people say it's his distribution, but then he found the statistics saying his shot stopping is not very good. His save percentage is one of the worst. I'm trying to connect the four keepers we have in Alex Bono as well, and what we expect from that position this season.
Well, I'll give a funny story is that I was recently in a fantasy league, which is mostly Americans. I'm the first Canadian in the league. And it rewards goalies too high in terms of scoring average in the league. And I think there's like 20 teams in the league, so everyone only gets one keeper. And there was 280 picks, and Bendick was picked 279. So our perception of what he is might be our perception, right? Like, you know, even it's funny because on our podcast, we think we might be too critical of him and other people defend him too strong. But in the world, you know, in the world's view of him, he's unknown. Or he is bad, right? Like, that's why he dropped as far on, you know, especially because, and it was funny in this draft because the first two players picked overall were Altidor and Gervinho. So they expect Toronto to be good, but they expect trouble in the keeping thing. Now, the funny thing is I had the one who drafted him. So,
yeah.
So I hope he does well. But I do think, and I've said this on a few occasions, I do think that Bono will challenge him for playing time as the season progresses. And you know, I know they lost to Red Bulls, and it was basically their B team, and they were outplayed in that game. But the perception was, you know, the feed was going off and on, so I only saw a bit of the game. But the perception was that Bono was one of the players who did stand out in that game and stuff like that. And as I said, you know, because of my college coverage and stuff, I did watch a lot of Syracuse over the past 2 years, and he is a very professional keeper. And when you see them play without seeing what's around them, he looks more of a professional keeper than Bendick. So I think he'll at least challenge Bendick. I think last year we had Julio Cesar come in. You know, arguably, Julio Cesar was better than Bendick, but it didn't make an impact on the season. Like, yeah, it didn't matter here or there if he was with us or if he wasn't with us. So I don't think goalkeeping is the be-all and end-all of winning. I don't think it's like hockey and stuff. But yeah, he's certainly not. I don't think he's set up for that position.
Okay, so, and then if we move forward, you know, we look at the back line. The only, I guess, question or sort of like controversy in quotes is Crivelle looks to be like he could be the starting right back. Morrow at left back. Perkey and Caldwell look to be the center back pairing. And if I could just say my main concern is durability at center back. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is going to be a major concern for the team this year. Perkey has a reputation of injury being injury prone, and we saw how Caldwell did last season coming back from the injury. He didn't look good when he returned from injury. So those are my main concerns, because I don't think a Haglund-Zavaleta center back pairing is going to do much for us.
That's where I think the loss of Henry will be pretty big. I mean, Perkies, or however you say his name, he has enough European experience, I think, to make an impact. I know when Aaron's spoke about him, he said he can be reckless at times and can, which was kind of the same track record Henry was getting. He's a little aggressive and was picking up far too many suspensions and cards. But I think he was reaching that point where he would have been your consistent guy at the back. And, you know, I like Caldwell. I hope, but he's going to need this Perkies guy to cover him quite a bit in terms of athleticism, because although Caldwell is good positionally, He's slow as shit. He's super slow.
And he's got a massive wingspan. He likes to slide around with his arms all over, flapping around all over the place.
Yeah. And then from the fullback point of view, I really like Moro. I think he's really consistent. It's good that you have him on the team this year. And on the other side, I mean, it's a toss-up. I wouldn't mind seeing, although I think he usually plays left back, I wouldn't mind seeing Delgado play out there every once in a while. Or I don't know if they can flip around or however, but sure, playing Delgado at a fullback spot.
Well, the other interesting thing is that when Toronto first brought Jackson in, that was his position in Dallas. He was a right back. Now, Dallas played a more wing back system, so it gave Jackson more freedom on offense than it did on defense. But yeah, no, I guess he's versatile in that position. You know, I think the issue in terms of defense is going to be overall consistency. And are these guys going to remain healthy? Are they going to stay on the pitch? And are they going to be able to work together? You know, it's interesting because I think Toronto right now is a team, if you're going into, say, the Champions League or CONCACAF Champions League knockout stage, it'd be a cool team to have there. It's a hard team to evaluate over a 34-game season because you're assuming that these guys are going to be capable of playing that length of time, and you're not sure that's going to be the case, and which we saw with Defoe last year.
Yeah, and if we move up the pitch now into the midfield, a lot to talk about there. You know, we're looking at, what like we already discussed, most likely we're going to see a Bradley and Cheru pairing, and it looks like they like the idea of Osorio and Finley as their two wide players. You know, the one thing I think I want to touch on is Michael Bradley, and, you know, as much as he's the face of everything on this team, I don't think you can get away from the fact, and it's, you know, it's sort of escaped a lot of discussion, was that he didn't have a great season last year after the first six games. And the irony or the funny thing is that, you know, Toronto's best run was when he was gone at the World Cup. Toronto was at the top, near the top of the table, and when he returned is when the team fell apart. So obviously the question is, and we've sort of addressed that, is does bringing in someone to relieve that pressure change the makeup and the approach that we can have, and will we see this where it's, you know, him and Cheru trading off, and then sort of what kind of impact do we expect from Osorio and Finley or anyone else to come in on the midfield there?
Well, I think the question is do you believe in omens? Because last year the team was based around the Defoe marketing campaign, and despite the issues with Bradley last year, Toronto FC is making Bradley the centerpiece of all their marketing thing, and so in some ways, I do think there's a soccer god up there trying to improve Toronto. These Toronto lessons along the way. So maybe it's Brad Luck, you know, it's a sort of Sports Illustrated cover.
EA Sports, that's what I'm thinking of. EA Sports curse.
As soon as TFC document one guy, that guy's failed to, doesn't to fail or something like that. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting. Like, I have been critical of Osorio in the past for not being as impactful as he can be, you know, and not being involved in play, certainly on the defensive end. And again, I think what we're generally talking about this team, other than in situations of defensive importance in the 18-yard box, we're more talking what this team is capable of doing offensively. And I think the expectations of this team is to be an offensive team. So if we're trying to deal with 0-0 draws or we're a defensive unit, I think there's far more questions than what we're probably going to mention in this pod. But, you know, I think Osorio does play good as a hold-up guy, as a possession guy, as a passing technical guy and stuff like that. And, you know, ultimately, we'll see how Finley develops, you know, because certainly in the last couple of years, Moore has proven to be a better player than Finley. Moore played in the EPL and was a fairly decent player in the EPL, and he played quite well last season. So what I eventually see probably happening is a more of a 4-3-3 with Jovinko playing a bit behind Altidor and more up front. And then Osorio is part of the three-man defense, almost similar to like Sporting KC does or something like that in the league. But yeah, it'll be interesting how they develop.
I guess for me, this whole discussion depends on what Vanny's view is of how he wants this team to play. I guess, like, I like Robbie Finley and I like Osorio, but they're not the best defenders, and you're going to need that from this team, especially if Bradley's going to do his freestyling and travel up the pitch a lot. And if you only have Sheru there, he's good, but he's not Superman. So, I mean, then you have guys in the middle that are slow in that we already talked about. You're going to be giving up a whole lot of goals. So I think defense needs to be a priority for this team as much as they want to attack. Again, it all depends on what Vanny's going to do.
Well, one interesting thing from this game, and, you know, not a happy Canadian story, but is the, you know, I'll throw this question out there. Is there an option? Is one of the options they're giving Seru more of the ball and more of an offensive role? Is they're thinking of not starting Azario and having Warner in with Bradley and Seru? And as I said, that's what Sporting KC has done successfully, done almost having three, they're all regarded as defensive midfielders, but having those three defensive midfielders in the center to both help the defense if necessarily and then be responsible for some offensive play as well. And then this depend on the three strikers as your main offensive opportunity.
Yeah, I would like to actually see that. That makes a whole lot more sense in terms of you want a solid base for this team to operate off of, especially if you're going to rely on Jovinko just to say, here's the ball, go score. It's same with Josie. Here's the ball, go score. You don't have to do anything else, really, all that much. You need a solid base for the team to work off of. And, you know, Warner gets his criticism. But, I mean, if you have him and you have a Sheru and you have a Bradley, then each guy can share the load. You're not depending on Osorio and Finley to do a lot of defending. You have enough cover for your center backs. It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Well, and then the other option, just to throw it out there, is having Jovinko and Osorio on the wings and then using other players to fill in the center, if that's something of interest.
Sure. And if let's move forward then. Let's talk about the strike options. And, you know, my thoughts of it, you know, as we're going through this, I'm almost thinking that is, to me, is one of the biggest question marks. Is Jovinko and Altidore. I mean, there's question marks, I think, front to back that you can bring up. But, you know, I think back to, you know, to give another plug, Sonia Missio wrote an article, I think it was for Soccer News Day, that was, you know, it was a bit controversial in the title, which I think may have hurt the you know, people dissecting it and critically reading it, where she just said Jovinko is going to be a flop, essentially.
Okay.
I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
And she said, you know, last year I thought about Defoe being like this and I didn't say it. So I'm going to say it this year. And if it was titled something like, these are my concerns about Jovinko coming, then I think it would have been more palatable because it did read through some things that I'd been thinking about in terms of him coming from Serie A and Juventus to MLS. You know, I have questions about, you know, just basic things in terms, you know, we know that what the refereeing in Italy cannot be good, but it's more because they're corrupt, not necessarily because they're incompetent. And that's what he's going to be dealing with in North America.
Well, they're not corrupt here.
Well, it depends on how you define it, I suppose. You know, I don't think he'll ever have come across a referee like Soren Stojka or Baldomir Toledo. Now, I don't know about our friend Kermit, but Kermit Quisenberry, we like him a lot on the podcast. But, you know, I think he will be surprised, just like when Bradley came back last year. There was some, you saw him talk about some calls that were just, he just couldn't believe what he was seeing. And then, of course, the question I would put forth on Altidore is, you know, as much as you can say, I always have a question when you bring in a striker who's had such a drought.
Yeah.
And you look back 4 years to when they had a good season and just think that, oh, well, if he scored 4 years ago in La Liga or he scored 4 years ago in Holland or in Germany, then even though he hasn't scored in the last 4 years, obviously he'll regain that form in MLS. And I refuse to believe that's a sure thing.
Yeah.
Those are my two points sort of there about those two players.
I'll let Kamal talk about Altidore because I'll just say the Jovinko thing. I do agree in some capacity, although I do think, and we'll go into this when we kind of preview what we expect from the season. I think there will be a filling out stage. But, you know, arguably outside of injuries and personality and the team did not knowing what they were getting, Defoe was not a disappointment on the pitch, right? You know, in terms of goals per minute or what he was expected to do, you basically got that. And I think Jovinko is the same way. Again, I think it's going to take him a time to understand what he can get away with in this league. The thing that I, you know, and I wrote about this when he came to the team, the thing where I think he has a great advantage that no one expects this from him is that he actually, despite his size, he actually has decent strength on the pitch. It's the fact that, and I think the referees are just generally going to respond to this, but I think everyone's going to respond to this, is the fact that he's going to make the other players on other teams look so foolish that it's going to give him advantages that he probably doesn't even deserve, right? So I think the argument is he's not going to, opposed to he's not going to get the calls, the argument is he's going to get, you know, probably too many calls, right? And that he's going to be identified as a cheat or as a, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know, like, again, I can't speak for Giovinco's personality. And, you know, I think eventually Defoe got, you know, what the crap is this league kind of thing. And, you know, Giovinco could do that, especially if he is successful at the start and think, you know, I could play somewhere else and, you know, and do as well and get better rewards. So, yeah, that would be my thing with him.
I think in general, the team had the excuse last year of, you know, Defoe wasn't in preseason and, like, there's a lot, they didn't have the continuity that they now have now, because these guys have been here and have been starting. We basically saw the starting lineup that you're going to see in this game against the Costa Rican U23 side. And I think they played most of the starters, if not all of them, against Oklahoma City. So there's no excuse for them not to start off hot. And that's the thing about Altidor. You talked about his struggles. What if he doesn't score a goal in his first five games? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
The knives will come out already. Oh, he's a bust. Look how much money we wasted on this guy.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah. So obviously supporters are like pretty bad about that, I would say. You know, within, if you get labeled after your first two or three games, even sometimes your first game, right? If you score a goal in your first game, you'll be loved for half the season. But if you're if there's expectations on you and you don't meet them immediately, it's going to be a rough road.
Even more so because now you're going to be on the national TV stage even more so because you have Bradley, you have Altidore. You're basically Team America. Like, you're America's team, even though we're TFC. We're basically America's team.
That's another, that was a little side note I was going to try to squeeze in there like later on in the pod. I didn't know how deep I was going to go. I'm sure I'll touch on it many times through the season. How the way this club has sort of changed face.
But it's a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, it's bad, obviously, because, and we'll talk about this with TFC too, but, you know, the guys that will be wearing the Maple Leaf will be playing in USL for majority of the year.
Yeah.
I was just going to add for Altidor, and, you know, just was trying to be as nice to him as possible. But he is a bit of a baby, and he plays that way. And so I think he's a guy that you need to work with for him to be successful. And so I think, you know, as we talk about Vanny's responsibility, I think that will be one of the key ones and how the other players play around him to include him into the play and stuff like that. And, you know, he's frustrating to watch in a bit of way. It's ironic in a sense because DK's still on the team. And DK is what you want. Like, Altidore certainly has a lot of the skill sets and better skill sets than DK. But Altidore, you would want him to play like DK. And he plays a totally different system, right? He's very light on his feet. He falls over a lot. He expects certain things to happen to allow him to take place and stuff like that. And arguably, that was the biggest issue that he had when he was in Europe, is that AZ Alkmaar developed a play for him and allowed him to be that player. Where Sunderland and Hull City were in relegation battles, they expected him to take over the team and make the difference. And you know, in that league, it's a whole different argument. But there's a reason why a lot of these top players from elsewhere don't succeed in that league. And in the MLS, it's based, again, I don't think it's a given that he's going to be great. Like, I don't think he's going to be a Defoe. I don't think that's a given. But I don't think it's a given that he's a failure. I think he's just another player, right? Yeah. And we have to remove the reputation and those things from him.
I really liked your buddy Paul Serres when he was on. There was a World Football Phone, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they were talking about Altidore coming back, and he said he's like a Frank Bruno. Frank Bruno essentially, where it was like, and if you to put that in perspective, I mean, Frank Bruno was a good boxer who should have been better, but he didn't have the mentality and the character really to be elite. Like, he had all the physical tools to be a great fighter, But when it came to like the elite fights, like against a Lennox Lewis or Mike Tyson, nowhere, like, it was not happening. Yeah. So the level below, you know, he's good, but anything above. And I thought that, you know, that's probably, I mean, on a, in a brush, broad brushstroke, I think that's probably a fair comment to
yeah. And a lot of things, you know, I think a lot of things is partly because it's MLS fault. We get caught up in the MLS hype machine and stuff like that. And if you're judging, you know, if we were doing a ranking system and saying the best four is in this league, you know, Altidore would be guaranteed in the top five, right? So it's not as if, right? You know, it's not as if there's a negative comparison and stuff like that. As I said, I think, you know, the EPL stuff, I think, needs to be completely ignored. And I think you just see him as he is. But it wouldn't surprise me by the end of the year if he has 12, 15 goals. And I think that's what you would expect from someone of his quality.
Yeah, one headline that I want to predict is if he does have a struggle, and, you know, a guy, any player during a season will have ups and downs. So when Altidore has his struggles, I guarantee you, you're going to see a U.S. headline saying Toronto FC is ruining Altidore. Guarantee you.
Okay. And if I want to move off the pitch, and we can hopefully, we'll just keep this quick because I don't know how much, how depth. I only have really one main comment on this, and I want to talk about coaching or front, like the front office, which may bleed into the question after. I mean, for me, the coaching, you know, the only questions I have and the only things that I'll say about this is I'm still going along the theme is, you know, I'll believe things when I see them. And we already saw on MLS Soccer, and I'll be nice. I mean, Armin wrote it, so it's like, good for you, Armin. I'm happy. But you're hearing the same talk. I feel like the same things are pumping Vanny up is what we heard about Nelson, the student of the game. You know, from when he was a player, he was already reading these manuals, and he was, and it was all his spare time, he was kind of like, whoa, like I just read this article 2 years ago. So you take out Nelson's name, we put in Vanny's. It's the exact same thing. And as much as I like the things I've heard from Vanny more than the stuff I liked from Nelson, my I was saying before, when Nelson talked about whatever, I just was like, this is bullshit. He is like, my bullshit meter was going off.
Yeah.
I didn't believe a lot of things that he said. I thought he was just talking out of his ass. Vanny, I think, is saying things that are like much more intellectual and articulate. However, my only question is, you know, theory and practice are two different things. Being that next level of a coach, you know, it's one thing to read manuals and be, you know, a philosopher and a genius when it comes to this stuff. But then to sit on the sideline and make the right calls and get the most out of your players and doing the man management, that's a whole other facet of the game that we don't know about him, that we won't know until we see it. And in the small sample that we did see at the end of last year, I have to say it wasn't impressive. And that was an opportunity for him to kind of open our eyes and give us a chance to see what he could do.
Yeah.
You know, and I had the same criticism when Paul Mariner finished the season. I'm like, why are you acting like there's something at stake? The season's like half gone. Just play.
Yeah.
Just show us what you got. And tell the players to do the same thing. And we didn't see that last year. So that's my concern. And then, of course, the whole thing where it's like, and then they have Robin Fraser sitting there. Swap, right? It just stinks of that once again, that if so things fall apart, they have the next guy. And it's just, I don't think that's the right way to set up your club.
Well, the thing that fears me, and especially related to all other soccer, is that the management team usually has responsibility of the players. So the players came to this team because of, and you know, and arguably, and he deserved to lose his job, but Nelson started bringing QPR guys, Bradley Orr, and all these guys that he thought would develop into the MLS. They failed. He failed. He lost his, you know. So at least by the end of Nelson's run, it was more, he was least more responsible for his own faults and stuff like that. I don't know how Giroud came to Toronto FC. I don't know how Altidore came to Toronto FC. I don't know how Giovinco came to Toronto FC. It certainly wasn't because Bezpachenko didn't wear a tie when he visited him in Italy. So, yeah. So in that sense, you know, you cannot, you know, usually with coaches is it's usually in soccer, it's a top down thing where coaches are responsible for their team. And that's how the team prevails. Right. And so if the coach is a failed entity, the team usually has issues. And if the coach is great, then the team does well. So, again, I think we're going to have to see. But I do think that there's a fear with always Toronto FC is it isn't a completely conducive organization. Where this is a long-term plan and this is why the team is going to be successful and stuff. We're going to succeed because certain players they brought in were better than the average MLS player and they were able to develop as a team enough to get results, to get them into the playoffs or get them into, you know, to the championship game. I don't think we're ever going to say Vanny did a great job. You know, I think it's, he's just part of the sort of the team kind of thing. In basketball, you see that a lot, but I don't know in soccer if it works.
Well, what I'll say, I agree with both of you. It's a wait and see thing. We have to see how everything meshes together. And I honestly have to see how he coaches, because I know less about him than probably both of you.
No prediction this year?
No, you all know how I felt about Nelson, and I'm glad he's gone. Oh, so glad he's gone. You don't understand. I am going to take a step back, calm down, and give him some rope. What he wants to
no
do?
No bets with Kristen Knowles this year. Nothing.
No. What he wants to do with this rope is him. Is up to him. He can hang himself with it if he wants to. He can use it however he wants. The one thing I can say that I noticed is with Nelson, he used this club to bring his friends over, right? Like you were saying, yeah. He brought his QPR buddies over, a team.
Coaching too.
Exactly.
Whatever that Oten guy's name, all his job was to hang out. Like, he wasn't even doing anything.
Come on, you bring over like your New Zealand buddies and dudes from a club that was shit in English Premier League. What I'll say about Vanny is it doesn't seem like he brought over all guys that were his buddies. He brought over Robin Fraser, who's his buddy, who, like you say, might end up taking his job, who knows. But a move like Giovinco, a move like Cheru, he's at least bringing guys that have a proven track record, and that makes sense to me. Now, whether they work or not, at least you can say, well, this move made sense and it just didn't work out for X, Y, and Z. But you can see the thinking behind it. With Nelson's moves, I didn't see a lot of logic behind it except for, well, I'm going to bring in my buddies because I know how they are and they need a job and whatever.
Well, the interesting thing with Vanny is he does seem to want to be a youth coach as much as he wants to be a first team coach. And, you know, you say he didn't bring in guys, but Delgado certainly is his guy, and the Zavaleta guy is his guy.
He's related to him.
Okay, he's very much his guy.
It's his nephew.
I didn't know.
You know Zavaleta well, though, right? You would have.
I'm familiar. I didn't know he was related to Vanny.
But as a player, yeah, right? Yeah, in Indiana, right?
Am I right? Yeah. He was a striker in Indiana. He was one of the top goal scorers in college, and then they decided to make him a center back when he came to MLS. But, you know, one thing maybe of promise, you know, and cross fingers and all that kind of stuff, you know, if we can have a positive season, if we can get the playoffs, and this grows, you know, maybe his development with these younger players can help the team grow in the next few or four, three or four years, if he's able to stay with the team and bring in, you know, USL guys and things like that into the team. And he seems to be more apt to do that. So you want him to succeed. Like, I don't think none of us want to succeed. And it's, you know, nothing against Nelson, but you kind of want Vanny to succeed, because if Vanny's successful, you think the team is successful, because he's not a guy who's just going to use money to win. He's a guy who's going to try to do something bigger than just,
Yeah, I'm rooting for Vanny. Let's come on.
Okay. Then let's get to this, like, the out, sort of the phasing out here, because let's get to the season predictions and whatnot. I don't know why I have on my notes here. I wanted to talk about marketing. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it's tied into the predictions, because there's nothing I find like we've talked about. Oh my god. Yeah, I want. Yes, thanks. Well, I was gonna make a joke. I like last year I found an article that was like in like a design site that I go to that was a case study on, I think it was Sid Lee who did the marketing campaign, and it broke down the whole big bloody deal thing, and you just look at it and I'm just like, this is sick. It's so gross how they do it. And then I'm laughing about saying like Sid Lee is here like watching TFC fail, ringing their like putting their fingers together, being like, yes, another $1 million campaign is on its way. And we've seen it. We've seen the new commercials, and you just like the double decker buses in the garage, the posters are falling, and you're just thinking to yourself, oh, like, is this the best? Like, is this what it's come to, that just every year you're going to shell out $30 million for players, a new ad campaign, and hope to refill the stadium?
The interesting thing, and you know, I know you have some business experience in marketing and graphic arts and stuff like that. But the interesting thing is, only because I happen to do this, you follow TFC on social media, and they get zero response to all these campaigns and stuff and all their advertising and all this kind of thing. So beyond failing on the pitch, it might be failing in the back office as well. And so they'll realize, you know, looking at it individually as itself, they'll say, oh, we don't need this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So
let's lay this out and make our quick overarching thoughts on the season and how it's going to go. And I think the way that I'm going to start off by saying is, if the strike doesn't happen, you know, starting the season with 8 games on the road and then Gold Cup, those to me are going to be major factors in the season, how it's going to go off in a negative way. I would expect the U.S. to go as far as the finals, if not the semifinals of the Gold Cup, which means you won't. There'll be a period where
being set up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Canada won't get that far.
Mexico, U.S. Who wants to put money on it?
Well, they might be feeling Costa Rica this time around, right? They might give them a break. The referees might allow them to get to the semifinals at least. So those are my main concerns. And then when we talk about the players, the concerns I played through there, you know, my gut instinct is to think of the worst. And unfortunately, I mean, there are 2 new playoff spots, so that's a better thing. But I kind of feel like my gut instinct is the season might go a little bit like last year. We might see a lot of similar patterns and similar things sort of shake out in terms of, yeah, they might have a bright start, but I think they might slog through the middle and it might be a fight at the end. That's kind of the way that I think it could shake out. And we might be sitting here come September, you know, biting our nails and wondering if we're going to sneak in those last few spots. Those are my thoughts of how the season could go.
I'll say they finish middle of the playoff pack. What is that, third?
Third or fourth. Yeah, now it's third or fourth. Fourth or fifth, actually, come off. Yeah, it's third or fourth, probably.
Okay, well, third or fourth. I don't think it's going to be comfortable by any means, because I think Eastern Conference might be a little better than it was last year. So it might be a little, like, you know, you have Chicago that's gotten better. You have New England that will look to duplicate what they did before. You have some other teams that people are high on. You know, you have the 2 new expansion teams that have made a lot of signings and whatnot. So we don't know what to expect from them. The depth that they have acquired, they're going to have to use it. We're going to see what these guys are made of. But I'll say comfortably middle of the pack.
Okay. Well, and I'll write about this in a future RNO article, but my prediction is currently I have them in third in the East. Partly, I don't think player for player, I think the 2 expansion teams are decent, but I don't think because they're expansion teams and because they have to start from scratch. I don't think, you know, as Toronto experienced when they were an expansion team, or Montreal or Vancouver did. So I don't think they're going to be playoff teams. So I think Toronto's going to be basically within a group. I think Columbus, DC, and Chicago are better than Toronto in the East. And so I think Toronto will be basically Red Bulls and Philadelphia, and those will be the comparison teams. But as I said, I think if the team is capable of keeping these players like Altidore and Dzhurchenko, I think this is, for the next 2 or 3 years, I think will be a consistent playoff team.
Yeah, and then to finish this episode and wind out, I mean, it's very relevant and important, and also because, you know, this podcast, you know, is obviously Toronto, and we have a very strong Canadian bias. I don't know if I call it a bias, but we're definitely pro-Canadian. I find that, like, I will definitely boost and look at Canadian players in a slightly different way than everyone else, because I think in a lot of ways they're not treated equally or viewed equally as a lot of other players, but also because, you know, I want to see our national program improve. I want to see the players get better, and in TFC2 and USL Pro, you know, I wish it was MLS that these guys were getting these opportunities in. But at least now this is what I think we're going to see, is that the Canadians that MLS teams weren't going to take, their USL Pro teams might take them on. And this is where we're going to see, you know, more playing time for these guys. And of course, with Toronto FC 2, I think that's going to be almost exclusively a Canadian side. But the one thing I wanted just to mention, talking about that team, that I think you have experience in sort of observing, Aaron, is the makeup of that side and how seriously they want to take the competition compared to other previously really good teams like LA Galaxy 2.
Oh, okay.
Where they didn't just say, oh, this is where we're just going to dump our players who aren't ready. They actually went out and signed players who have experience to make that team a proper team. And that's the question I have with TFC 2. And of course, putting in the warning that you hear people talk about this team, and it's like, it was like when the Academy first started up, like everyone was counting their chickens, right, before they'd hatched. Everyone was saying, oh, we have an Academy. Like, man, there's going to be like a stream of players coming through to the first team. We're going to have all these Academy players dominating and making their appearances on Toronto FC. And there really hasn't been a player from TFC that's been like 13 to pro.
Yeah.
That we've seen make a real mark. We see players coming up that are on the bubble, but no one who's been like, who's actually made that transition. And my only concern about this TFC too is that, you know, you're already hearing people saying, oh, this guy is, you know, he's not good for TFC, so he'll go to USL Pro for 1 year and then he'll be ready. I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I think that's the way to approach it. I think there's still a lot to do. I think it needs to be looked at as seriously as any professional club.
Yeah.
And that's the only way it's going to happen. Just 24 games isn't going to make Jordan Hamilton MLS ready, I don't think.
Well, I have positive expectations for USL. I don't mean this just for Toronto FC. I mean the league in general. I think what's going to happen is what always happens in sports is there's an effect where if one team does something and succeeds, the other teams follow. And so I think to the benefit of Toronto TFC 2 players, they're not only going to be viewed by TFC, they're also going to be viewed by other teams in the league. And what we saw this year with Becker and Welshman now at Real Monarchs, Salt Lake's franchise or whatever, what it means is if Chapman, use Chapman for an example, if he succeeds greatly at TFC 2 and TFC still doesn't give him opportunities, other MLS teams will try to get him to join their team because there will be awareness of what he's doing at TFC 2. What's happened is players like Apricio and those guys, is no one knows what's happened. Like, they just disappear, right? Like, you know, Kamal and I are doing some work right now looking at young players and seeing their career. And it's amazing because through the academy years and through the college years, they're playing 30, 40 games a year. And then for the 2 years they've been signed as a homegrown player in the MLS, they play like one game in 2 years, right? So I think just the exposure and the fact they're playing and the fact they're developing is going to be a good thing. And I'll let you have a comment on TFC too.
I'm excited for the league in general, way more than I am for MLS, to tell you the truth. Too, yeah. I mean, for more reasons than one. I mean, basically your future and current national team guys will be playing in the USL. So you're probably going to want to watch them. It's to your benefit. And then also their games are on YouTube for free. So you're not paying a dime, you know. You're not paying for like Rogers Cable or MLS.
Paying for blacked out games on MLS Live. That's what I'm doing right now.
Ridiculous.
Fuck.
And then for me, selfish reasons, I'm closer to the Ontario Soccer Center than I am to BMO, so I can go watch them easier. But in all honesty, for all three Canadian teams, I'm really excited. But if you look at Toronto FC 2, I want to see a guy like Quillen Roberts finally get a full season of games where we can see if he's a professional keeper or not. Jordan Hamilton had a great season last year, so much so he got a loan to Portugal. If playing well in USL means that you can get loans and deals overseas, I think more young prospects will be willing to say, hey, let me go to USL then. Let me get it.
Well, also, you know, and also in a kind of a negative, well, positive negative statement, is the naivety of the North American soccer fan base. So, for example, if Altidore scoring 2 goals in 10 games with TFC and Jordan Hamilton has 10 goals with 12 games with USL Pro, there's going to be an active campaign to get Hamilton to play forward, even though not recognizing the, you know, the difference in league and expecting you'll do the same thing. I guess Kamal's in my favorite comment, the Dom Dwyer effect, that there has actually been success,
yeah,
past success of players. Now, my expectation is Toronto's not going to be the leader in this. I expect that other teams are going to show this. But, you know, by just putting it out there, it gives an opportunity. And I do, you know, I think that arguably if you're making $30,000 playing the USL, but you're playing 25 games a year and you're making $40,000 playing one game in the MLS, if you're looking at your own career, the USL Pro would be the better, you know, not be a 10-year USL Pro guy, which we might see in a development phase. I think it's a much smarter form of development.
I think that we're hitting the point in the podcast where I really love to shut it down because I like to think about the listener and let them know that I'm sure you just don't want to listen to us talk on and on and on and on and on longer than 45 minutes or thereabouts. So we'll close it down on those predictions of the season. And next weekend, of course, will be the opener against Vancouver. Any quick predictions about how the season's going to start? My gut instinct says it's going to be 2-1 Vancouver. That'd be what I would say.
Yeah, like a 2-1, 3-1 Vancouver.
I'll be positive just to be different, but I'll look at the game against Seattle last year where they came out strong. They showed the difference. And again, I think it's a good comparison. We had this comparison when we were doing our podcast last year between Vancouver and Toronto, because I think in many ways, even though their teams are completely different, they're in the same boat. So I think it's a good
barometer,
yeah, to start the season off and to see where you guys are cool. From both sides.
Okay, so to finish it off, Kamal Hilton, thanks for coming on the podcast. People can find you
at Kamal Hilton. And yeah, I'll be doing a lot of USL coverage for RNO. I'm going to be like the USL guy. And
I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. I think there's like a great value to that, because like I said, I think we're going to see a lot of Canadians playing in that league, not just in the Canadian teams, but American teams too.
Yeah, it's a good change. I think the site has a lot of, it's going to have a lot of TFC, Montreal, Vancouver, first team stuff already. And so this fills a need for the site and for you guys. And, you know, with the Canadian national team developing the way it is, it's, again, I'll say it, you might want to go on YouTube and watch it for free. Not that I'm getting paid by them to say it.
Yeah, I wish we were. This episode is sponsored by YouTube. And ENB Sports, Aaron
yes,
Nielsen,
yes.
You know, you do all your statistical work and whatnot. And obviously, you can be found at ENB Sports,
yeah,
both ENB online Sports and on Twitter.
Yeah, and then I'm doing my yearly, I guess I call them the analytical previews. So I'm doing a general one for MLS and then one for the three Canadian MLS team, so I can be made fun of the rest of the year for my horrible predictions.
Oh yeah, no kidding. The Vancouver one was the best. You got a good one every year from one of the teams.
Yeah,
Vancouver last year. Oh, you think they're only going to score 44 goals?
They scored 44
because they scored. Was it 4-1? Was their opener? Was it 4-1 against New York? Look at that!
Like they're going to go score 40 goals rest of the season. That's how many exactly they
that's
scored.
Exactly what happened. That was pretty good. Yeah, and the only glaring one though was Toronto. That was the funny part. Okay, and then of course you guys can find me at Clark RNO. On Red Nation Online. Obviously, that's where you're probably checking this out from. So thanks a lot for listening. I'm glad that we watched some of the game first. And I, like I said, from tying this back into the start of the podcast, because I do have the, you know, just the marketing and all that stuff just really, it just
grinds your
gears. Oh, it's the worst. And to actually just sit and watch a game, though, it was,
and
to not have that, it put me in a good state of mind. And it sort of sat me and said, you know what, I do enjoy watching the game. I do enjoy watching his players, and it was great to see Giovinco score that goal in the first half. So, good to reestablish with myself that I am still interested in watching the team and seeing how these players interact and all that stuff. So, I think I'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot, guys, for coming out. And thanks a lot for listening, and hopefully we'll be back next weekend when Toronto faces Vancouver. Okay, so hopefully we'll catch you then. Thanks a lot. Eastside Stand-Up is the only Toronto FC podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or via email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agree, disagree, it doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, The Footy Roundup, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.